You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello there, we are back. It is Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Series 7, Episode 37. Well, I say we are back. I made the effort to turn up last week. I don't know where Gary was, but of course we were over in the Algarve for the Ireland game. We did get a bit of a podcast out. Two great interviews, I thought, last week with Joanna Byrne, the Drogheda chairperson, and Kieran McCormick, the new CEO of Treaty. But Gary, you were nowhere to be seen, lad. Where were you?
Well, I was over looking into your face. I think I actually spent some time looking for belts for you, actually. I managed to lose a second belt through airport security.
Yeah, keep an eye out for them old airport security when you're going through Dublin. They like nicking an old belt, so they do.
Jeez, I couldn't believe when you announced that. It's the second time that happened to you. It's just baffling. But anyway.
It'll be up on eBay this week.
It'll be up on Dundee, will it?
Between the Stripes podcast host Kieran Burke, his belt.
We'll park that for a minute. But yeah, good trip, I thought. Kind of a strange Ireland trip. Everybody was kind of separated, but so it's good to get a result, but I suppose it was kind of moot after the desperate performance against Greece.
To be honest, last week were the two most boring football matches I was ever at. I can't believe what a good trip Albafeira turned into in the end, but that was just all through our own alcoholism more than anything else. the game of football. It was, look, as you said, great to get the win and all that. It's been a long time since either of us seen a win. If you include Longford Town, it's nearly 2 months, I think, since we won a game. So it was very welcome, but Jesus, I don't know how we stayed awake.
Yeah, well, I fell asleep on the bus home, out of the stadium. Yeah, it was just boring. There was nothing really going on. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to think twice about going to a Gibraltar away game again. But we have Amsterdam to look forward to.
Yeah, a game where we'll get hammered instead. So we can't be pleased, I suppose. But yeah. I suppose, look, we've both been going to the games for probably 10 years now, probably doing our away games. And there was always a great element of League of Ireland fans on these trips. But it seems, I don't know if you've noticed, it seems to be growing now a lot. Like, you can't walk anywhere when you're on a away trip without bumping into a League of Ireland fan somewhere. Like, we were chatting to Treaty fans on the bus on the way home from the game. I was chatting to a Pats fan the other night after the game. There was Bowes. There was the met at Lone over in Paris the time before. Just, you're constantly bumping into League of Ireland fans all the time, and you'd have some great crack and bit of banter with them on the trips. And for me, that's actually one of the most enjoyable aspects of the away trips these days.
Oh yeah, no, it's good. It's good to see a lot of League of Ireland fans, and I suppose it adds something else to the trips, particularly when, like, you know, a trip like this with playing Gibraltar out in Portugal, you know,
you need something to talk about.
It's fairly emotional, particularly when you're the campaign is long over. But look, it was good trip, and no grief, no crap, no messing with flights or
no
buses are traveling around like that. It all went fairly swimmingly, so that's always a plus.
Yeah, plenty of pints drank, plenty of kebabs eaten, so that's a good trip in my book. And as I said, we bumped into plenty of listeners again, which is always great. So anyone that we did bump into over there, thanks for chatting to us, and see you in Amsterdam. But look, let's get stuck into the League of Ireland stuff, Gary. As ever, we're brought to you this week in association with Quinn AV, who's been a busy man tonight, obviously streaming at Lone against Waterford in the playoffs, which is where we're going to start in a second. But QuinnAV.ie is our sponsor this season, of course, on the podcast here. Check them out for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. And I'm delighted to say we're going to be joined on the show by the Kerry FC CEO. That is Brian Ainscough. So, as I said at the top of the show last week, we had the new Treaty CEO, Kieran McCormick. We had the Drogheda chairperson, Joanna Byrne, as well. So we're continuing to bring you behind the scenes at the League of Ireland clubs this week as we chat to Brian about Kerry's first season in the league and how they're shaping up for next year. So that'll come a little bit later on. But look, we're recording just shortly after the full-time whistle has gone in Athlone and in Wexford. The playoffs begun tonight. We'll start with Athlone against Waterford. I was watching this one in full on LOI TV. Great job done by Anthony and the streaming team down there. I thought in the first half at Lone, I think if they do go out with this tie next Saturday down in the RSC, I think that first half is something they'll look back on as an opportunity to make hay, and they let it get past them. Franz Perrault with a header that just went over the bar. They had another good chance as well when Campion Hines cut in and just narrowly put it wide, but weren't as good in the second half. It looked like Waterford, when they got the goal, great, brilliant goal from Coughlin, looked like they were just going to take control of the game, but they let Athlone back into it. So the tie is very much still alive, but I just have a feeling Athlone might regret not, as I said, taking more opportunities in the first half.
Yeah, I watched that game myself, and look, I think that's a very good summation of it. I think the Athlone chances in the first half, you were very much right. I think probably Keith Long was a bit disappointed with his Waterford team after the first half. They weren't bad, but
I don't think Athlone were the better team in the first half.
They certainly were, and I think probably Waterford were, I don't know, a bit lethargic or something like that. Yeah, they weren't great in the first half, and they really came out in the second half and put it to Athlone. But after the goal, Athlone came back into it again. It kind of woke them up, and they were much better. But I think the goal from, well, the two goals are both pieces of individual brilliance from probably the two best strikers in the division.
Yeah,
which is great to see. Coughlin's individual brilliance, because he had it all to do himself. And similarly with Perrault, really classy finish into the bottom corner.
I suppose like every goal, they're both avoidable. And I think it was pointed out by Gordon, the commentator for Athlone. Waterford got a throw in almost the exact same position as where the goal came from, just a few minutes after they scored. And they put one in front of Coughlin and one behind to make sure that didn't happen again. So I can't remember whether they did that for the actual goal, but they mustn't have if the commentator was pointing that out. So, you know, they could have been a bit more organised off the throw-in. But as you said, it's a piece of brilliance, a piece of class from Coughlin. The Athlone goal is far more avoidable, because we've been watching Perrault spin centre-halves with his strength all year. He did it throughout the first half. His hold-up play was absolutely excellent, pinning the ball with his back to goal and bringing players into the game. Perry tries to go beyond Perrault and head the ball or get something on it. And Perrault just spins him and then sticks it in the bottom corner. But that's a really poor decision from Perry to go and try and beat Perrault to the ball.
I think so, but I think that's probably like the Perrault factor, maybe, because he's so dangerous, particularly when he's on his own. They probably wanted to go and try and eradicate that problem and overcommit it, probably. I think, though, and while yes, they're both individual pieces of brilliance, we were talking about it before we started, there's no question in my mind that Waterford should have had two penalties. I can't believe that Oliver Moore didn't award two penalties for the down the near side where beside the main stand in
I asked for some immediate reaction from listeners watching the games for the pod. I'll read some of them out in a minute, but there's obviously a lot of tweets about the penalty decisions, and particularly the first one.
Yeah.
When I was watching it live, I shouted, oh, they're in trouble here at Lone. But when I watched it back then, I thought, I can't remember what Waterford player it was that went down, but I just looked at it and it looked like maybe he was already on his way down. So I could kind of accept that one and be like, right, fair enough. I can see where the ref's coming from. The second one is more of a foul for me, but the only question in my mind, was it inside the area? It was right on the line, but there was definitely a lot more contact, and he's come from behind the Waterford player. Waterford player's got in front. He's been clattered from behind. It should have been at least a free kick and definitely a yellow card as well, but just not sure whether it was in the area or not.
No, definitely two penalties. I know what you're saying. I know you're trying to give the benefit of the doubt or whatever, but I think these are very clear cut. There's no two ways about it. I think it was a poor decision on both counts from the ref. But I think Athlone, while yes, they'll be regretting probably not capitalising on the dominance, or, you know, probably on the balance of it, they were a bit more dominant in the first half, that they didn't capitalise more on that. As you mentioned, Campion Hines had a good chance as well to get away with at least one of those as a penalty. So no matter what way you cut it, they probably should have been losing that game.
Their goalkeeper, Brendan Minogue, made a big, big save at the end as well.
At the very end, yeah. So
he's done that a few times this season. He did that in the game where they turned it around against Longford there in the season when Perreault scored that wonder goal. He made a big save in the last minute of that one as well. So he's a young goalkeeper, but he seems to, you've talked about this before, not enough goalkeepers bailing their team out when they need them. Minogue seems to have that little knack, which is something very impressive for a young player. But
look, a young keeper, yeah.
As we said, the tie is in the balance at Loughborough Waterford now on Saturday. Waterford are obviously going to be favourites. Can you see them slipping up?
I can, yeah. I'm not sure.
At Loughborough won down there the last time they were down there.
They did, and I think Pro got the two of them, but I'm not 100% on that. But
Campion Hinds going off is a big loss.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But I'm not sure. I know he is a big loss, and he is. Look, he's a very important player for Athlone, but I'm not sure. Like, has he been that featuring that heavily within plays in the last few weeks? I don't think so. I was very disappointed with him.
I think his pace just frightens you. I think if you're a defender and you're looking at him running at you, it puts the fear of God into you a little bit.
Yeah, well, look, between Perreault and Campion Hinds and the rest of it, they have plenty of opportunities to
cause your problems. But we are guilty of it as well. We always talk Perreault, Campion Hinds. One player who was phenomenal again, and I was talking about this lad 2 years ago, and I actually said at the time, I'd love to see Longford go and get him. Who am I going to say?
Yeah, Hickey.
Hickey.
A baller in the midfield area.
Breaks everything up in the middle.
Yeah, he was very good again tonight.
He can play centre-half as well, but he's definitely, that's his position there in the middle of the park.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant. Another good, great performance. He'll have to keep doing that now on Friday as well.
Yeah,
or Saturday.
He's going to be busy. Yeah.
He'll be a busy boy. But look, he needs to be.
I'd agree with you though. I wouldn't be surprised if Waterford slip up against that loan on Saturday. I'm not that convinced by them. I don't see them. I know it's early, and I know we've been having this same debate for about 3 months solid now. Will it be Cork? Will it be Waterford? I don't see Waterford going up this season.
It's hard to see. No, I know we'll come on to Cork. I saw them on Sunday there. God forgive me for going to that game. But, you know, I think we, and just on it, I know we're coming on to Wexford and Cove now in a moment, but any of those teams could beat Cork. There's no question about it. I think Waterford have a bigger problem getting out of the playoffs into the playoff, you know, the Premier First Division playoff final. I know it's a semi-final, and then the next one's a final, then there's another final, whatever way they call it.
Promotion, relegation, playoff.
Final. What's this? The playoffs. Yeah, you know what I mean? Anyway, we'll forget about that. But like, I just think there's Cork can be got at. But look, I think it'll be an important game. It's going to be quite tight. I'd say Waterford need to score an early goal on Saturday to settle themselves down, because I think there'll be a bit of nervousness in them. Even though they had some good performances, Bagley again, he was in the team of the year, and rightly so. He's been massive for Waterford all season, but he was very good again tonight. You know, they'll need those players to step up. And just say, you mentioned it as well, Dean McMenemy, he started on the bench this evening. He's played a lot of football for Waterford. Maybe they're trying to keep him in the back pocket for Saturday. Very good player, can really control a game from midfield. So hopefully he's back from a Waterford point of view.
Moving on to the other playoff tonight. That was down in Ferry Carrick Park. Wexford 0, Cove 1. I mean, Wexford, big crowd out tonight. You know, this long wait to get into the playoffs. They narrowly missed out last year. Your big, big excitement behind this game. And then the goal you concede straight from a corner. it's just a shocking way to lose a game of football, particularly such an important one.
Yeah, and look, there's been examples of that, you know, crazy goals. I remember Longford were playing Merview in a promotion relegation playoff, and the keeper, I don't know if you remember this, the keeper ran outside the box and handled it. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
You know, like, stuff happens, you know, in playoff situations that just, oh my God, I've never seen this before. Or you see it very rarely. So, look, these things happen. It's definitely,
unfortunately, I think we've seen quite a few goalkeeping errors down in Wexford this year. They're another team. There's quite a few teams in the first division this year have gone through a huge amount of goalkeepers.
Yeah, I think Longford Town and look, Lee Stacey, and look, and without taking, I know that Lee Stacey is has got a lot of clean sheets this season, but to a degree, he's probably got a lot of them by default, or got that number by default because he's been ever present in the Cove goal. Whereas most other teams have chopped and changed, made countless changes throughout the season.
Treaty, I think, have gone through three or four keepers. Harps have gone through four or five. Wexford have gone through a good few as well. We've talked about a few times this year, the standard of goalkeeper and across the league is quite poor. And I think that that's been seen this season again. And look, it was just a dreadful goal for Wexford to give away. Cove winning away from home, going home now. I think they'll see this out. Could be a dark 100%. Horse, you know. Could be a dark horse.
Yeah, look, I think... I don't... it's kind of hard to know. I think, you know, at that particular... You know, this is probably one of the biggest games that Cove have had in the last few years, probably since the Cup or the League Cup final. What was that, 2016 or 17? Was it around that cut? Yeah. So this is probably one of their biggest games that they've had in a while. So I think they're going to close it up and just do what's required on Saturday and look forward to the promotion, the first division playoff final. But
the final before the final.
The final before the final.
One great thing about the playoffs this year, when you look at the teams involved, we spoke about the players at Lone Have. We've spoken about Waterford, the Cocklands and all the rest. You look at Cove, they've got Jack Doherty. Just pull it out of a fire. You've got these X-factor players that can produce big moments just when needed. So I think that makes these playoff games, no matter who's facing who, there's always that chance that the underdog, they've got them X-factor players that can change a game in a matter of moments. So I think that's something really exciting for the games that lie ahead. But just some of the listener reaction to those games tonight. As I said, we got a lot of tweets about the referee, Jim Fitzgerald, who's a regular listener and a Waterford fan. He says, Ollie Moore making it all about himself again. Shocking, but not shocked. Look, Gary's given his view that the Blues should have had at least two penalties. I can certainly see the argument, but I can see it from the ref's point of view as well. Chris, disappointed for Wexford after the supporters created a great atmosphere, but Cove were superb at controlling the second half of the game tonight, totally shut it down. Still optimistic Wexford can turn it around at the weekend. Got to get the first goal, though. I think that's something me and you have highlighted a lot about Shane Keegan's team this year, Cove. They're very good at the game management side of things, and we've spoken to Shane about that. I think he said last year, they weren't able to do that. They didn't have the players. He's brought in a few experienced heads this year, and we've seen them on a number of occasions against Longford where the football hasn't been overly pretty, but they have locked that game down very securely and very professionally.
Yeah, they have. They've grown in that area. There's no question about it. But I think, you know, that was something they clearly needed to do. A lot of stuff wasn't working for them. They were conceding some desperate goals last year. And look, it was important that they rectified that, and look, he has made those changes. They're in the playoffs, and they're in the driving seat. Looking forward to Saturday.
Yeah, and we've got more listener questions for later on, but just a final tweet on the playoff games tonight. Slightly dejected Harp, great username. Really enjoyable game in Athlone. Waterford missed out on two Stonewall penalties. 1,500, a poor crowd for a playoff game? Especially considering the decent Waterford travelling support. So the only thing I'll say on that, the weather has been absolutely brutal over the last few days. It was a Champions League night as well, which wasn't ideal in terms of trying to give these playoff games a bit of a profile. But that was still, I think, a record crowd for Athlone this season tonight. I think they got their biggest crowd of the season on Friday against Longford, and I think it was up another 200 tonight. So when you consider, again, it was a midweek Tuesday night Champions League game, games going on elsewhere, to get another 200 and something in the gate, I think that can actually be looked at as a very decent Athlone crowd.
Yeah, I think it's fine. I think there's been so many changes and chopping and changing, and who's running the club, who owns the club, who's doing what all the time around Athlone, that they've managed to get a good base, and hopefully they can, you know, keep that base going for, like, no matter how long they end up or where they end up come the end of the season. Will they be in the Premier or will they be somewhere else? Well, First Division, obviously, sorry. But, you know, I think that's a fair... Like, how many was that Wexford?
I don't know. I might have a quick flick into FAI Connect here, but I was just going to say to you, if I had said to you at the start of the season that at Lone we're going to get 1500 in a gate, you'd be shocked. Like, so I definitely think that that's a decent crowd tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, and Wexford haven't put in their attendance figure yet.
From the few clips I've seen and stuff, it looked like a good crowd.
It looked to be a good crowd, absolutely. So look, fair play to them for that. You know, we're all building, we're all doing our best.
Yeah. As I said, more listener questions to come a little bit later on, but let's move into the Premier Division games from across the last few days. I suppose it all got a little bit messy with some of the postponements due to the storm, but we got all the games played in the end, and Shamrock Rovers, they had to wait till, was this moved to Sunday?
Sunday evening.
And they put on, as the old cliche goes, a 5-star performance against Drogheda, and fair play to Kevin Doherty. He admitted after the game he was fearing it could have been a lot more than 5. Rovers were just on it on the night.
They blew them apart.
Some wonderful goals,
but like, it wasn't a contest at all, was it? Mm. It was, you know, and I think,
not too often this season we've seen Drogheda blown apart like that, though.
No, but they were missing so many people.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, nothing to play for either.
Nothing to play for, but also, you know, they were missing a lot of staff. A lot of bodies were out, so it was always going to be a difficult night. But I think some of the goals were like training ground stuff, wasn't it? It was.
They were very clinical Rovers. And even you look, I think it was the first goal, wasn't it, where Ferrugia breaks down the right, plays it across the box, and Clark comes across it off the left and volleys it into the bottom corner. And it just made me think, if those two lads had been fit for Europe, it could have been a very different situation, because they really lacked pace in the team at times this year. And those two lads are electric when they're fully fit. But obviously, as we know, keeping them fully fit has been a huge issue.
It has been a huge issue, but I think didn't Clark go off injured? Did I make that up?
In this game?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I wasn't watching live.
Yeah, no, I can't remember. I didn't watch all of it. I think I knocked it off after 2 or 3 nil or something like that. I was like, but yeah, I think Kevin Doherty kind of had a bit of a premonition in his pre-match interview. He was like talking about players that were missing and stuck for bodies to an extent, and talking about younger players that came in. So it was always going to be a difficult night, particularly with Rovers. I think 2 or 3 weeks they had off, and then an extra couple of days. So they were probably dying to get a game, and they're only delighted to, you know, get the opportunity to play.
Still, as the saying goes, you can only beat what's in front of you, and they more than did that on Sunday. It was a really,
they
really
bet the life out of them. Yeah,
performance, great. And they're closing in on that 4 in a row. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a while. We'll move on, and we had the dress rehearsal for the cup final. Bowes 0, St. Pat's 2. Do you think that strikes a psychological blow, or will it be totally forgotten about by the time the players walk out in a few weeks' time at the Aviva?
Well, look, my position is that I think Pats are going to win the cup.
I agree.
All my Bowes fans are online.
Apparently, last week, the pod, since you weren't on, I believe it was one of our most listened to shows of all time. There was huge internet traffic coming through the Phibsborough area in particular.
That's nice. Look, we can't please them every week, but yeah, look, I think Mark Doyle has a grey header to open the scoring, but
and we spoke about on recent shows, Doyle probably hasn't been consistent enough in his performances given the quality of player he is, but he always has that goal in him, and that was a really good finish.
That was a super finish. Great cross from Curtis. People were talking about Curtis's cross as if it was the best thing that they'd ever
just
seen. Calm down,
didn't he?
Yeah, but he just crossed it in. Like,
he just stood it up into an area.
Fine, like, grand. But yeah, really, the header is obviously the goal, but like, that's the real bit of skill. He was under pressure as well. Nestles it into the far corner. Talbot has no hope. And you know, that settles them down. But I think the second goal really shows the problem with Bowes at the moment. The defending, the decision-making in that area is just, it's worse than school by, you know, it's desperate. To be so unaware of what's around you and who's a, you know, particularly when you're playing, you might get away with that type of clearance in the first division. A lad isn't on your case as quickly, but we've seen Carty. He's
Taught a really good
extremely
game.
Quick. Yeah, but all of, even just on his own attributes, like he's a really nippy, alive in the box all the time. So to make a decision like that to boot, was it Rakowski? It wasn't Rakowski, was it?
I can't remember.
I can't remember who it was, but to make that decision to clear it in the way they did, and that just ended the game for Bose. They were probably dead and buried at that point. I don't think they, but I never thought they were going to win that game. I know we didn't do the predictions last week, but I had no fear in my mind, particularly with the way that Pats have been going over the last few weeks. They've been kind of doing what they need to do to keep in touch with Rovers, something that we probably haven't seen enough from the challengers this season. But look, they've set it up to go into the game on Friday.
Yeah, I want to get that going to be.
Is it in Chicago, that game, is it?
In Chicago, yeah.
Oh, lovely.
It's live on the telly as well, which will be great. But just obviously one of the big headlines out of Bose, unfortunately, is that season-ending injury for Keith Buckley. Is that going to be... you're just looking ahead to the cup final. Like, is the what a blow that is.
Well, you have the other, it is Rakowski that's banned for the final.
Yeah,
and then you have Buckley, who's been playing in a defensive position for most of the season. So
forget about where he plays or anything like that. He is their leader, and we spoke about it after they beat Galway in the semi final. He wasn't engaging in any of the on pitch celebrations.
Yes.
He was, you know, head down. I suppose the challenge for Declan Levine now, what he's got to do is flip it on its head and kind of do it for Bucko type thing. You know, he's the club legend. He's the lad that's been around looking to get his hands on that trophy. Let's go out and win it for him and let him lift the trophy. That's got to be the motivation now. But yeah, as you said, Rakowski injured, Buckley in, Rakowski suspended, Buckley injured. Is it just going to be one of them things where everything's going against you going into the biggest game of the season? You mentioned some of the challengers not applying much pressure to Rovers this season. Derry City again with another poor result at home to Shelburne. The big talking point in this one was the red card for Diallo. What was your view on that?
Oh, I looked at it last night. I would have actually... I thought it was a yellow, to be quite honest. I can see how the red was given. There was a bit of intensity in it, let's say. Probably a bit too much. And that's why the red was probably given. But I wouldn't be... I don't think that too many complaints can be had, to be quite honest. I think it's a fair enough decision.
The Derry fans were not happy. We're not happy with this decision. I think they've got... there was a stat...
shock horror.
There was a stat been thrown around as well about their results under Rob Hennessy as well. But look, that's whatever.
Elaborate on that there. What is it?
I'd have to dig it out, but they've got a very poor points return when Rob Hennessy has been the referee.
Well... yeah, but look, they've a poor points return when they need to.
On the red card, my view on it is this: I looked at it first and I was like, yeah, probably is a yellow. But the only thing is, it looks like it could potentially be slightly high up the leg, like on the ankle bone type thing. I mean, if this is a Premier League game, Sky Sports job, we've got 20 cameras there. It'd be zoomed in. You'd have the slow mo and the close up. And if we've seen that, people might go, oh, geez, that's a potential leg breaker. That's a red card. But we only get the one angle. It's quite far away. The referee is best positioned there. If he felt that it was a high tackle, then maybe that's why he produced the red card. So they created very... just going back to Derry, as you said there, it doesn't matter who the ref is or what's happening on the pitch. We've seen it so many times this season where they haven't been clinical in games. They created very little. Well, they had 11 on the pitch here. And then when they obviously went down to 10, they were on the back foot. I'm probably lucky to come away with even a point in the end. They just haven't been good enough this season to go and win a league title.
No, they haven't. And that's the problem. You know, I suppose then you look to things like Rob Hennessy and the refs and this and that and the other to bail you out of that reality. And, you know, I think that's part of the problem there.
The other big decision in this game was the disallowing of Jack Moylan's goal. Yeah, again, we only have one angle. It's very hard to even see the ball hitting his hand. I've lost touch with this handball rule. I think there were suggestions that because the striker has, you know, gained an advantage off the ball hitting his hand, that that's why it's been disallowed. Whereas it's this weird one, whereas if the ball had broke to someone else and they put it in the net, I think the goal would have stood. So it's just
that's
the way,
right.
Just
no, that.
Is that
that's exactly the rule?
That's exactly the rule. Yeah, okay, yeah, there you
that's
go.
That's exactly the rule.
Yeah, so look, it's a strange one, but yeah, look, a draw probably a fair result in the end. Shell.
But this is another example of Derry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's
that's why I don't want to get bogged down in referee and stuff here. This is another example of Derry, their ineffectiveness this season.
Yeah, it's
a real shame we didn't do the predictions league last week, because I would have had this as a 0-0 all day, every day of the week.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I don't think. Actually, you know what? I have the video open here now. Hold on now.
Like, this is, there's very little in this Derry performance to what I saw the week before or 2 weeks ago in Drogheda.
That's the thing.
And then you look at Rovers go blow Drogheda apart. Now again, as we touched on, Drogheda were missing quite a few players, but that's the difference here.
That's true. I actually, just looking back on this handball, right, and I actually don't think it was handball.
That's a difficult angle to see.
Yeah, but I'm just looking up where the ball ended up. Anyway, look, it wasn't given. That's the end of it. Probably, I would argue, probably a poor decision, but it's just, you know, what was that game ahead, the one before the break? You just mentioned it just there. Drogheda.
Created, yeah. Next to nothing.
Next to nothing. And I'm tired of hearing it, and I'm tired of seeing it. You know, I went for Derry to win the league this year, and they're not on it. They haven't been on it probably enough all season, and this is just another example of it. And it's tiring enough, and I can only imagine how tiring it is for Derry fans.
Another team we're tired of talking about this season is Sligo Rovers. 2-0 defeat at home to Dundalk, and I think from speaking to a lot of Sligo fans and Dundalk fans that were obviously watching this, they just said that it was a Sligo team that they're just ready for the season to end. I think the supporters are ready for the season to end, and that was very much shown in their performance on the field. They were beaten very comfortably by a Dundalk team that are actually, I was going to say, probably have nothing to play for, but if you look at the table, there's actually still a small chance they could finish in the top four this season, which is remarkable. Good to see Daryl Horgan getting a goal. He seems to be slowly coming to the boil now after a slow start. So I'd expect next season now, when he gets a full pre-season under the belt and all the rest, we might see a different player. Sam Durant got one as well, and he's been impressive since he arrived at Dundalk. So a few positives there for Dundalk. But this was another dreadful Sligo Rovers performance.
Yeah, look, it's just adding them to the collection. I think I was... Was I accused of having a vendetta? Someone said against Sligo or whatever that Sligo and Bowes. Yeah, well, look, whatever about Bowes. I don't need to make that much of a comment on Sligo. You just need to look at their results, look at their performances, look what they're doing with their playing staff. You know, it really speaks for itself. Daryl Horgan. Gets the goal. Really bad keeping. That's a keeping mistake. You know, that's a brutal goal to concede.
Yeah, straight through the legs. Yeah,
straight through the legs. Yeah. But like from a shot from outside the box, like the keeper should be booting that away.
Yeah,
You know what I mean. If he can't catch it, kick it away. You know, and that's just another example of crazy decisions. From a playing perspective.
Yeah, they changed the keepers between the two games. Obviously, they played again last night against Pats. Aye. I think, wasn't it Brush came in for that game last night, or have I got it the wrong way around? Yeah, no, it was Brush, and Brush had an excellent game last night against Pats. The young lad, yeah, he'll be disappointed with that first goal for Horgan going through his legs. But, yeah, look, it's just been a disaster season. You can see why people want it to wind up now. But Cork won 2-0 against UCD. This is a game you want to talk about because you were at it. But, I mean, there's actually still a chance that Cork could catch Sligo. I don't think they will. I think they've run out of road, Cork. But for Sligo to be playing the way they are when, you know, potentially their status as a Premier Division team is still on the line, it just feeds into everything we've been saying about Sligo for the last two seasons on this podcast.
Yeah, look, obviously I think I'm right all the time, but mother of God, I've nailed on with Sligo. I've never, you know, particularly over the last couple of years, and you've highlighted, I would say, good things that they've done. Like, we both commended them for the investment they've made in the ground. We were up there, it was a couple of years ago, with the town a couple of times, and lovely ground, constantly making improvements to it and everything. So, you know, they're doing a lot of good things off the pitch, but on the field, it's just not been at it. And
yeah, I was reading a few threads again online today there, like, and after watching back this Sligo Dundalk game,
doing a bit of rooting, were you?
And watching the Pat Sligo game last night, there's surely no way John Russell carries that team into next year.
You mean he's doing it, or the team are gone?
The players have a lot to answer for this year as well, but I cannot see a way that John Russell is the manager of Sligo Rovers next year.
Really, why is that? I actually think he probably, like what can he do? He's been totally...
come on.
What is there?
If he's the manager next year, then that's basically the club saying your performances this year were perfectly acceptable to us. And if that's the case, then I, as I've said before, I'll be running down the bookmaker to get money on Sligo to be relegated next year.
Right.
18 defeats from 34 games.
And two left.
And you're telling me he's done an okay job?
No, I'm not saying that it's an okay job. I'm saying that there's a, you know, reality to it. There's a context to it.
The context is Liam Buckley was moved aside because they felt that he wasn't bringing them in a whatever direction. And John Russell has come in and he's brought them exactly the same sideways direction that Liam Buckley, the club felt, was bringing them. So what's so special about John Russell is because he's a Sligo man. Is that the thing here?
Yeah, well, you know, you get that extra bit of, you know, credit in the bank for that. I think, though, you highlighted that, you know, you're bringing in a Liam Buckleyite in John Russell into replace Liam Buckley. You highlighted that would probably be an issue, and look, that's really come to pass. But I think the players are just not at it. And that's why I asked, is it going to be John Russell trying to get a new team in place, or is it going to be John Russell?
He had this off-season to get a new team in place.
Yeah, well, if you look back 12 months ago, I said, what did we say? Sligo Rovers.
Massive off-season. Massive off-season.
The biggest off-season on the planet, and they didn't do it.
No.
Why was that? Look, I think some things are evident. You know, you look at McNicholas on loan. Where is he? Wrexham. Has he even played a game? Does anybody know? Who knows? I'll get some of the documentary TV watchers to tell us about that. But look, I don't know. You're just looking at it, looking at the highlights there. There's just a lot of bodies standing around in red jerseys just waiting for this to be over.
It's been like that all year.
That's the thing. And even if you go back to the second game of the season, the drop 2 points away to UCD, and you're just like, God, here we go. another go of it, another season of it. So, look, I think Sligo Rovers and their fans will be delighted to get into the off season, and they can forget about Sligo Rovers for a little period. But I think it's going to be more of the same next year without serious changes around the place.
Yeah, I agree. UCD Cork, you were at this on what day was this?
Sunday
afternoon, 3:00. Cork 2-0 winners.
Yeah, now, you know, I need my head examined anyway, but by God, what was I thinking? I should have just stayed at home and gone to bed. I've seen plenty of bad games down through the years, and look, I've seen thousands and thousands of matches. I'm not going to say it was that bad, but by God, it had a good shout. It was definitely one of the worst games I've seen this season. The lack of quality from both sets of players was just something to behold. For Cork to win 2-0 at half time was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that it got to that stage. But it was more just two capitalizations on errors.
Keaton got the two of them, did he?
No, Brian Whitmarsh got the first.
He did, yeah. Sorry, the keeper was a bit unlucky there. He made a good save.
He was. He bailed out his defender. That was poor defending.
Yeah, but the second goal, wasn't the second one where Dyke Steele breaks through with a good run, yeah. and then he feeds it into Keaton, and it's a beautiful finish from Keaton. That was probably the only good moment of the game. He just passes it, caresses it into the bottom corner, kind of makes the keeper think he's going to do something entirely different, and then just tucks under him. It just goes to show the clinicalness of Keaton. But you weren't impressed, obviously.
I know it was a brutal game. Now there's very so negative, or can't wait to pass it back to the keeper all the time. And I know Cork were probably always going to win that game.
It looked like UCD. I only watched the highlights of this, but it looked like UCD in the first period of the game. Anyway, they seemed the better team than Cork. I don't know if you can shed any light on that.
They seemed to be like, yeah, this is an opportunity for us to get some points on the board in a season that we're long relegated. So, but that kind of withered away as well. Right. Morale and all the rest of it is quite low around the camp. Probably in UCD. Obviously, I don't know whether it is. Really, but look, you're getting better under every week and you're long relegated, so I'm sure it can't be that high. But I think at the same time, they probably did think, look, we can probably gather a couple of points here. But it wasn't to be, and it was just like, yeah, it was just brutal. There was no...
So you're worried, you said it earlier, you're worried for Cork in the playoffs. The only thing I'd put to you, this was essentially a dead rubber, that I don't think they're going to catch Sligo. Will there be a different animal in the playoffs a little bit when it's on the line?
I don't see how. I saw some lad online going, I don't know who he is, and I'm not calling him out or anything like that, but it was like, Hakkinen was class or something like that. Hakkinen, he was class at passing it back to the keeper. That's it. I don't know what I don't understand how you could get to that point. It was just, there was nothing in the game. Poor pass, and Bolger was busy in the midfield and he was breaking up a lot of stuff. Not that there was much to break up, and he was making some nice passes, but like, who is the keeper? I'd actually looked him up for Cork.
Mine's gone blank.
They've had probably five or six.
They've had a few keepers this season as well.
But he was there roaring like a madman in his own goal, shouting at the strikers of what they were doing. You know what I mean? It was just like...
Ollie Byrne, yeah.
Yeah, it was just needless stuff. And it was just like, I really didn't know what was going on. It seemed to be so disjointed. And I know this has been a disjointed comment about that game, but like, there was just such a lack of quality. It was something to behold. And that's why I think... so who's going to grab it in the playoffs?
Well, look, we spoke about the first division contenders and some of the X factor players they have. I think Cork are pinning everything on Rory Keaton, aren't they?
Oh, there's no question about it.
He looks like he is a bit about him, all right, though.
Ran into a lot of holes himself. He was there, down, and he was very busy running around the place, but it going nowhere. Do you know what I mean? A few bodies.
I think it's going to be the Keaton show if Cork stay up this season. And then last night, as I said, we had Pats winning 1-0 against Sligo Rovers. Again, this wasn't a classic, but Pats
classic goal.
Yeah, good goal. They got a deflection, I think, but it was a good goal. Not much of a game, but against Sligo, I think they had one early chance, maybe with Hartman. Aside from that, they never looked like scoring in this game. Never laid a glove on St. Pat's.
Yeah. Well, look, the vendetta lives on.
So it sets up Pat's and Rovers nicely on Friday.
I know we're going to come on to it, right? But is there a chance?
I think Pats win on Friday. I was looking at this today. I was just looking at the run-ins and that. I think Rovers fall over the line. I think Pats win on Friday, but they obviously have a game in hand, Rovers, and it's one of their games against Cork. And a home to Sligo. Cork and Sligo. If you don't win it from here, pack it in.
Yeah. Jeez, it'd be awful to lose four in a row from those two teams, wouldn't it?
Two of the worst teams in the league this season. Yeah, definitely would. Look, obviously, we reviewed the playoff games tonight a little bit earlier on. There's probably not much point really going back to the final round of games in the first division there. It's kind of old news now. But what we will do, we're going to bring you that interview with Brian Ainscough, who is the CEO of Kerry FC. Kerry have completed their first season in the League of Ireland, and we're going to catch up with Brian now to hear about how it's gone and look ahead to next year down in the Kingdom. Now, I'm delighted to say we're joined on this week's show by the CEO of Kerry FC, and that is Brian Ainscough, who is speaking to us from lovely Kerry. Brian, great to see you. How are you doing?
All good. Actually, beautiful weather down here for a change. So the sun is shining. So it's a good day.
Yeah, I'll have to get down there. It's absolutely lashing where I am. But look, first season done and dusted. How do you reflect on it?
I'm still as giddy about the thing from day one. I mean, when we started off, we were delighted. And I think, in my eyes, it couldn't have gone any better. You could say wins and losses, but as an organization and the sort of support that we've had down in Kerry from day one through to the last game has been fantastic, you know. So, and when looking at the young players come through, has been really good for me to see from the outside.
Yeah, I suppose there's two different aspects to look at. Isn't there? There's on the pitch and there's off the pitch. I suppose off the pitch is more really your forte. So that's probably where we'll start. You had a number of sellouts this season. The crowds held up very well, even when results maybe weren't going your way. Maybe a slight dip off towards the end. But I think overall, you'd be very pleased with, as you said, the support you got from the community in Kerry this year.
Yeah, we just running the numbers last week, and it's just under 800 a game, you know, which I think for a Division One team in its first year, when you look at 18 games and obviously with our record being what it was, it just shows that how enthusiastic our fan base was, and a credit to them for keep coming out and supporting the players and the club.
I suppose gate receipts is only one part of it. Commercially, how do you think the club has performed in terms of attracting sponsors and building kind of relationships within the community?
Yeah, I mean, I've really nothing to go on. It's our first year. But just even coming out the gate so late, like last November was when we got accepted, and to be able to get a lot of the local community sponsors from Kerry Airport, from a shirt sponsor to a lot of the hotels and establishments down there supporting us. I was shocked at the support that came out right out of the gate with a new program that not tested and anything like that. And we think we really can now commercially pick up from there and probably double where we were in the past, you know, as now we sort of have a structure to our company.
I suppose that's going to be the challenge now. As you said, 800 for a first division team, particularly a team towards the bottom of the table for most of the year, is an incredible number. Matching that and trying to even better that now, and as you said, commercially as well, that's a big challenge. Is it a bit daunting?
Yeah, I mean, not daunting. I don't think that's a word. Challenging is the word, which is great. It's the same as on the field and off the field, our staff. I mean, I'll give you, for instance, it's like we really didn't have time to go out and market Kerry FC. We didn't have time to go door to door looking for fans or through clubs, and it was basically what sort of the swell of support came in the door, you know. So without really, you know, in like most businesses, going out and doing some door to door marketing and a little bit more engagement with the local communities, we only see that there's an upside to our support rather than a dwindling off. We think that it's the opposite, that we're going out and being more involved and active in the community, that we'll see that pick up, you know.
Yeah, that's probably a good point, because I know when we traveled down earlier in the season, we made the point that in Tralee itself, it unless you were going to the game, you didn't really feel like there was a club in Tralee as such. There was no real, you'd saw sort of the odd jersey floating around or whatever, but as you said, you didn't have time to really tap into that. So you've got the entire off season now to go out and really embed yourself in the town there.
Yeah, I mean, and not just in the town, but in the county, right? And obviously we don't want to be just called a Tralee club, right? And, you know, via we call Kerry FC. So from that standpoint, we really want to establish ourselves in every community within Kerry. And some of the boys have already started doing that. We've have some community partner clubs and some clinics and camps. We've been doing outreach, and that's only we're only in the beginning phase of that, so to speak. So I think, you know, that will become more evident, and I think that we can generate a lot more interest around the county.
Even on that, have you any sort of analysis done on the breakdown of your support this year? Do you know where the vast majority of people are coming? Are they coming from Tralee, or are you getting a lot of supporters from Killarney and elsewhere in the county?
Yeah. I think our marketing guy, Ivan, who does our social media, would probably have more of a handle on that, and we haven't really delved into that. But if I was just a betting man, I think that most of our fans are from the local area. I would think at this stage that would be my best guess, just, you know, and obviously that's something, if it's the case, you know, that's what we want to expand on, right? That we're getting the local fans. So can we get the people from Killarney, Listowel, other places around the state, around the county?
You've got great media coverage down there as well. You mentioned Ivan, and obviously I'm on the media scene a bit. I know the kind of local papers and the local radio stations down there that are covering Kerry on a regular basis. It's great to have that kind of backing as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been a long time coming, I gather, having a pro team down here on the football side. So I think everyone was, we're on a honeymoon phase with the media, and they were really, really nice to us and respectful. And I think that went throughout the season. And it was, we think that will continue. Obviously, the market that we're in, being a GAA county, but on top of that, I still think, the Kerry people love their sports. And whether it's running, basketball, volleyball, whatever it is, they really get behind. Our next step is obviously to be more competitive on the field as we go. It's a marathon. We're not thinking that we have to get to the Premier League next year or anything like that. But the idea is that we definitely want our fans to feel like, you know, there's improvement shown for 24. You know, and that but basically improvement will mean results.
Yeah, I suppose, look, you've put it this way, that the honeymoon phase was maybe this year. Next year, supporters are going to want to see you that bit more competitive on the pitch. But I suppose it's a nice way to round off the year. You got a couple of decent results there towards the end of the season, brought up double digits on the board as well. I know you only got the one win in Athlone, but do you feel there's something to really go and build on now for next year?
Yeah, I mean, if the first half of the season, total compared to the second half of the season, you know, I felt it was night and day. We were just getting our feet wet with all the young players, but also we had some older lads in there giving us support, getting us off the ground. By the time it all, you know, the second half of the season rolled around, I don't think there was many games that I watched, and I watched them all, but I don't think there was many games that really that we said, okay, we weren't competitive in. Obviously, in certain parts of the field, we'd like to be stronger. But I think with the average age and the inexperience of our group, I think that from when 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds get 20-30-odd games under their belt in a year, that we can only hope and you know, you would imagine that we'd come back in better shape next year.
Yeah, there was so many games this year where it was maybe a set piece that let you down, or just an individual decision, or even a refereeing error. But I'm sure for Billy that was very frustrating, kind of watching those same mistakes occur. So next year, as you said, with so many games now under those younger players' belts, it's time to leave that type of stuff behind, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And again, you know, we get a bit more chance now to recruit. We get, you know, besides the business side, so on the field side, we have a little bit more chance to sort of, you know, get positional players and so forth like the other clubs in the league. So we hope that translates into wins and keeps our fans coming through the gates.
And obviously one of the big success stories of this season has been Ryan Kelleher to hit double digit goals in your first season as a League of Ireland player. That's an incredible achievement. And I know you've tied him down to a longer term deal as well. So he's been definitely one of the big success stories this season for Kerry FC.
Yeah, I mean, I think somebody said to me, there was a statistic yesterday that, you know, his percentage of goals to chances and the most in the league. I think someone said the data was at 37%, and there's not many players that are going to score every time to three times to get the ball in the round of box that they're going to bang it home. And if I saw that, I think any club in the country would want to be giving him a look, you know. But fortunately, we locked him down. He does have a little bit more schooling to go right into the community. But he definitely was a surprise. You know, I didn't know the young man. But when he gets around the box, even the last goal of our season this year that Kennedy scored, from my angle, it looked like it was nearly going in, you know, it was from Ryan's cross slash shot, you know, and Kennedy put his head on it. But, you know, anytime he's around the box, he's become a real danger. He doesn't need a lot of space or time when he gets into that area. And I would imagine next year, if he gets a little bit more service and more balls played through to him in a way that he's not fighting the ball so much, I think that, you know, who knows, can he get up and, you know, some of the other players in the league who scored 20 and 30 goals, can he at least stay up in double digits and then push his career along, you know?
As we said, it's great to see him getting tied down so quickly to a contract as well. Is that a sign that maybe you're taking that next step towards a more professional setup?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's different levels. Like, obviously, we came in as an amateur club and we told people last year that we would probably go to where we're sort of, whether you call that part-time or whatever part-time is called these days. And, you know, I don't know when people are in the league, what do they call part-time and full-time? I'm not privy to everybody's, how they do their payrolls and so forth. But we're basically going to a part-time basis next year, which obviously means more practices. But it means that the players get a bit of money in the pocket. And, you know, with the goal that down the road that becomes we become a full-time program, a full-time pro program. But next year, definitely, you know, we're in a position where we can lock down the likes of Ryan and players like him.
Yeah, that's brilliant to hear. And I think most people will probably be surprised to hear that's happening so quickly. But again, I suppose that's a sign that off the field, things have gone very, very well for Kerry.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was sort of, you know, we knew we'd come in the first year and see what's out there and take our lumps. And then the second year, see, to just push on a little bit more. And again, we're not saying baby steps, we're saying steps, you know. Baby steps, you know. It's, you know, we expect to see progress based on the field and off the field as we go forward next year. And if you look around the league, and even since we're only in a year, but there's three or four new owners in the league since we've come in, and it bodes to show you. I mean, even from my background, being in America and obviously being an Irishman years ago playing the League of Ireland, I can see, based on Brexit and a lot of other things, that our league is really starting to, not take off. It's been taken off, but it seems to be fan base has gone up. The Premier League is fan base every week has gone up. You know, I think there's still a lot more to go in, you know, from facility wise and a lot of other things within the league. But overall, I see that the League of Ireland is definitely on an upward trajectory, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing the amount of, as you said, kind of overseas investment that's coming into the league. Obviously, Kerry, yourselves have the American link. We've seen the Canadian set up now going into Treaty, and Walsall are hopefully going into Drogheda as well. So it's amazing the amount of people, and obviously there's the Turkish link at Shelburne as well. There must be something happening. There must be something good happening in this league.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you can feel it. I mean, you're a media guy, you could probably feel it and sense it. I mean, you know, obviously Celtic are involved with Shamrock Rovers at some level, and you got, you know, Shelburne have Hull involved with them, and I don't think it's going to stop. You hear whispers around there that there's other teams that are also looking at investment from whether it's other European or slash Americans, you know, going forward.
Is external investment something you'd welcome if the opportunity arose?
I think we're in a good shape right now. That's not necessary, you know. But I mean, you know, no one would ever say no to anything that comes your way, and we'll look at that when the time comes. But right now, I think the club itself is in a good place. But you know, we'll be obviously open to opportunities and listen to things that are out there.
Look, as we said, obviously there's lots of positives in the league at the moment. But as you know yourself, been involved, but behind the engine room as such. It's not all rosy in the garden either. I mean, I had the Drogheda chairperson, Joanna Byrne, on here last week, and Drogheda have done remarkably well on the pitch and off the pitch. And yeah, she said if this investment doesn't go through, they're going to have to substantially cut their cloth. I think there's been whispers about maybe issues at other clubs as well. It's still tough to make a living in this league.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't claim to know as much as some of my peers in a sense of the of how they run their businesses and how they operate. I can just do it based on what we've currently how we've set out our stalls. So yeah, I mean, if you don't manage your budgets and your finances right, you could easily have a shortfall that becomes unsustainable going forward. And, you know, like you said, at Rose Garden, we all have wish lists and coaches have wish lists for budgets and general managers have wish lists for this and that. And, you know, my job is probably to make sure that they're rational with it, with their wish lists. And obviously then we can be the key for all our clubs in the League of Ireland, whether they're Shamrock Rovers or Kerry FC from the top to the very, very bottom of it, that we all have to stay physically manage our own resources to stay afloat. But I do think when you see players, and it's not that there's 20 Evan Fergusons in the world, but when you see young players, I've seen over the last few years going, whether they're going to different parts of Europe, and definitely over to England, you're starting to see a lot of players getting produced, and I hope more get produced through the League of Ireland, whether it's Scales and other players come, you know, going through. And I look at some of the academy games out there, and I got the opportunity to see some of the Premier League teams play against our group, our club, and I see some fantastic young talent coming through, you know.
You mentioned, obviously, you have more of an opportunity to look at recruitment now this coming off season than you did last year. What type of market do you expect to be shopping in? Will it be local based? Will you look across to North America? Will it be a mix and match? What type of player can we expect to see coming into Kerry in the off season?
Well, our mission, one of our vision, is obviously to have a nucleus of players coming from the local communities, and that resource depends on how good of a job Damien and the staff will do over the next few years to see what pipeline that we can definitely get players like Ronan and Sam and Sean O'Connell, you know, players like local lads like them coming through on a consistent basis really helps us. And we're going to be obviously giving those young players an opportunity. And then from that, you know, my American sort of background, that we definitely will be given trying to put some good American players in a shop window and giving them an opportunity to play at a pro level outside of what the MLS has to offer. So we've got a lot of players interested. We're going to be having sort of some ID camps over there over December. And I think that will produce, you know, some players. If you look at my friend Faleo, which actually the club is just down the street from my club in Boston, Faleo. Literally, when you say down the street, their field, I could fall down the hill onto their field from my field. And they happen to be, you know, have brought over some good American players, from Franzi used to be a Bolt, used to play for my club. And his brother who plays in Israel also played for me, you know. So
two that got away, huh?
yeah, they got away. It's all right. It's okay. There's plenty more, you know. And so we definitely do think we'll have a sprinkle of American players that come through the system that will help us. And then we definitely have a lot of connections across the ponds and stuff like that. We never know what will come across from whether it's UK or other parts of Europe. But I think we would love to have most of our players from the Munster area and definitely the Kerry area. And then on top of that, be sprinkled in by some of our American players that have come through our system at my club and clubs like mine in America.
Yeah, it's interesting you should mention Vallejo, because I was actually going to ask you about that. I suppose if you go back a number of years and you've seen American players coming into the league, people would wonder what kind of quality they're coming from, what kind of level they're coming from. But you look at the success that Lone have had this season with the players they've brought in from North American football. There's definitely a market to be tapped into there, isn't there?
It's funny, the MLS, people look at the MLS, but if you look at the rosters of the MLS, most of them are coming from the other North American areas and the South American areas, and the rosters are full. And so, but it is a, the American players are suited sort of to the Irish and slash English or German system of playing big, strong, athletic kids. And from that standpoint, they can sue what's going on in the League of Ireland. And I still think that there's more of them to come over and play over here, you know.
And just on Mount Hawke Park, obviously I've been down there. It's a lovely place to go and watch a game of football. But going forward, do you see improvements being made? Is that another thing on the list that you'd like to check off down the line, just little gradual improvements all the time?
Yeah, I mean... you know, like I said, it was November when we started to try and get, last year we had to get our lights up to grade, our field up to grade, fencing up to grade. So there was a lot of sort of small, it became big expenses that to get the place ready. But I think now we're looking at, is there a way to, are we maximizing the facility for fans? And then obviously, can we make it, more friendlier for the families when they get there, in the sense of, you know, seating areas and so forth like that. The area, a little bit confined in a sense of what we can actually do, how big we can, you know, how big that place could be. But we do have ideas that we're talking with the KDL about, and obviously, you know, we have a long-term lease there, but we're a tenant, you know, of the KDL, you know, so we're like a so-called guest, you know, so we'll have to do it in tandem with the KDL to see what improvements best fit both of us as we go forward. But we definitely want to constantly make it a better place, whether it's our video, when we're showing, the media, showing better value for people that want to watch our team play on the streaming services, or a better chance when you come to the game, that's a better experience for the player, for the kids and the parents. So we'll definitely be looking at that, and we'll have a couple of little little tweaks to it for next season, definitely.
Very exciting. Look, Brian, it's been really interesting catching up from myself and the team here at Between the Stripes. I think Kerry have been a wonderful addition to the league this year, and hopefully it's the start of a long, long journey. So thanks so much for speaking to us today.
Here, I'll be good. You be good. Take care. I'm going out to enjoy the sun.
Good man. I'll look out with the rain here.
Be good. Be good.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net, or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, great to hear from Brian. As I said a little bit earlier, I hope our listeners are enjoying these little kind of behind the scenes interviews. It's great to get an insight into the running of League of Ireland clubs, is something a little bit different. And I think Kerry have been a great addition to the league this season, and looking forward to seeing what sort of progress they might make next term. Let's go to the Premier Division predictions for the weekend. Obviously, the First Division now done and dusted, so it's Premier Division all the way from here. Only, two, three games left now, Gary. And let's go to Shells against UCD. Shells still in the hunt for Europe, and this should be 3 points in the bag. And with Dundalk playing Bowes, and Pat's playing Rovers, this is a massive chance for Shells to make inroads on those European places.
Well, this is it. Particularly with, as you mentioned, the dog playing Bowes in Oriel Park. They have a great opportunity to leapfrog Bowes into that fourth place position. UCD aren't that much. There's no question about it. I didn't see anything to change my mind on Sunday. I'm going to go 3-0 Shelburne.
I was hoping you'd stick with the 4. I'm going 3-0 Shelburne as well. I think they just motor on through this. No problems at all. Dundalk against Bowes. As I said, it's hard to believe that Dundalk are still in with a sniff of European
shocking,
football. Bowes the pressure's probably starting to mount now. They'll know Shells obviously are going to pick up 3 points. And if they don't come out with this with a win, they're behind Shells and they don't want to go into that cup final knowing they have to win it. That just adds even more unwanted pressure going into a game that where there's already huge amounts of pressure. And look, Dundalk, no great shakes this year, but Oriel Park is still Oriel Park. This is a really intriguing game. How do you see it playing out?
I don't know. I was thinking about this one earlier on, particularly because I was just looking at the highlights of the, the Bowes-Pats game, and it's just like, I haven't been overly impressed, and as you alluded to there, it's kind of shocking that Dundalk are still a bit in the shout of getting into fourth at this late stage of the season. But I think they could make a huge stab at it here. I think they could pull it off. I'm going to go for 2-1 to Dundalk.
That's just because you have a vendetta against Bowes, isn't that right?
That's right. Yeah, I've too many vendettas. I have to get write all of these vendettas down.
I think this will be a draw. I'm going to go 1-1 on this one. Cork against Derry. I wouldn't be at all surprised, Gary, if Derry slip up here.
Really?
Yeah. We said this recently for a game. What was it? Was it
Sligo Derry? Sligo Derry.
Sligo Derry, yeah. Yeah. We called it that night.
Yeah. Here, you go first on this one.
Cork to get something out of the game. 0-0. Derry just looks so toothless in recent games, creating very little chance.
Games.
Yeah,
they've drawn 11 this season. I know Rovers have as well, but they've only lost 4. So, yeah, I can't. I think Derry will just do something here. I'm going to go 1-0 Derry.
Okay. Moving along nicely, that brings us to the big one, Pats against Rovers.
Well, you've already said that you think Pats are going to win on Friday.
Yeah.
I'd be inclined to agree with you. Inchicore is buzzing at the minute. They're looking forward to the cup final.
John Daly's man.
Yeah.
Inchicore's bouncing again. Great chant.
Is it sold out, is it?
Oh, I'm sure it is, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think there'll be an odd goal in the difference? One thought I have about it is, remember Derry were beating Rovers up in the Brandywell, and then I think it was McElhenney gave away a soft enough penalty on back.
Yeah.
And Rovers just did what they needed to do to just, put the boot into Derry.
Yeah.
They didn't play very well. Derry were in the ascendancy, 5, 6, 7 minutes left, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And Shamrock Rovers get the goal they needed to get the point. Do you think there's an element of the possibility of that here? Do you think Shamrock Rovers will just go, everything's coming up for Pats. They're in the cup final. They're on a bit of a run here. And we're just going to come along and play poorly, but just dig out a point.
I don't think Pats will gift them something the way Derry did that night. I think if Rovers are going to dig something out, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see someone just bang one in from 25 yards.
Okay.
But the pressure's off in a way for Pats. They've qualified for Europe now. They're in the cup final. So their biggest concern will probably be players picking up injuries going into that cup final. But I think with the cauldron, the atmosphere that will be Friday night, I think once you step onto that pitch, that will just cup final. They won't even know what that is. That will go out of their mind. They'll just want to beat Shamrock Rovers in front of a packed out house. And I do think they'll do it. I'm going to go 2-1 to St. Pat's.
Okay, I'm going to go 1-0 just to be different.
Pats or Rovers?
Pats.
You're going Pats. Yeah, so that would then leave the teams level on points, but Rovers with a game in hand. That's a way to Cork on the Monday. And of course, we should point out, if Rovers just avoid defeat on Friday, then they can win the title on Monday.
But that's in Turner's Cross, isn't it?
Yeah. But just to put that out there. But let's just say, as we said, Pats win on Friday. you'd expect Rovers to win on Monday down in Turner's Cross, and then it goes down to the last night of the season where Shamrock Rovers are at home to Sligo. You'd expect Shamrock Rovers to win that, and Pats are away to Derry, so Pats definitely have the tougher run in. I as I said earlier, I think Pats win Friday, but I think Rovers just creep over the line.
Okay, it's creeping now. You said it was falling over the line.
Yeah, creeping, falling, staggering over the line. They'll get there anyway. That
doesn't matter. It's four in a row.
Yeah, it's definitely not the double digits that I think we predicted earlier in the season.
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
Just on four in a row, actually. Interesting. I was reading comments from Stephen Bradley the other day. I thought this was a few things to pick up on, actually. He mentioned that they've been bringing in members of the previous four in a row squad throughout the year to give little talks and stuff like that. I think that's brilliant. And the other thing is that he was talking about a lot of the kind of outer view of it is Rovers are going to win four in a row and they're just going to go off into the sunset and that'll be the end of it and it's going to be someone else's turn after that. Bradley was saying, why can't we do 5, 6, 7 in a row? That sounds like a man that wants to stay there. There's been a lot of speculation, obviously. I know did Lincoln fill that job? I don't know. But there's obviously been speculation that maybe at the end of this season, has he done as much as he can? He sounds like a man that's ready to, and obviously there's been rumblings about discontent behind the scenes as well at board level, but he sounds like a man that's ready to go again for next season.
He does. There's no question about that, but
just looking to see, did Lincoln fill that manager's position? I don't think they did.
Yeah, but just on the 4 or 5 in a row, I think, you know, there's a lot number of issues that, you know, I think he's struggled with resolving on the team side of things. Alan Manus is retiring. I think there was talk about, you know, a couple of weeks ago about Jack Byrne not being offered a contract, I think.
Apparently he's since been offered one, yeah.
Right. You know, but there's other... the talk of someone else, even was it Towell, maybe? Can't remember.
I think a lot of people have linked Gaffney to Galway too, haven't they? I thought he was really good against Drogheda the other day. It was like the Gaffney of last year. He bullied everyone.
I don't know. It's just, look, it's going to be hard. I think this is a very important off season. I think there's a number of positions that need to be filled. And look, you look at, like, Jack Byrne this season, he's been injured a good bit. Clark was injured plenty as well. So, can you hang your hat on these boys? You can't, really. So, I think, you know, they have a good squad. Like, even Ferrugia there, just talk again, oh, how long will it take for him to be in the Ireland squad? Well, if he says with Rovers and he says, you know, with the unfortunately, he is a bit injury-prone, never. So, you know, I think stuff like that is a bit overblown. I think, you know, they brought in Poom, who's been a good addition. He's been quite, hasn't, would you say he's been as it's explosive or as exciting?
Yeah, remember me and you went to see him in the Leinster Cup against UCD and we thought they'd sign the next Perlo or something, I don't know.
Estonian Perlo. He's showing up and he's available. You know what I mean? There's a lot of lads there that just aren't actually available at all. So look, I think he's gonna have to be very busy in the off season. I think the biggest job of all though is the goalkeeping position. That has to be obviously position one to fix. I don't think it can go into next season with Poles as number one.
No, definitely not. Right, back to the games this weekend. Sligo Rovers against Drogheda United.
Jenny Mac. This game seems to be going on a good bit. was this very recently as well.
I suppose they played in the Cup and then they played a few days later in the league as well.
Yeah, so
we're saturated with this one, all right, yeah.
Well, the only concern for me is that there's the old... injury room is a bit full at Dundalk or Drogheda at the minute.
Yeah, only for that, I think I'd be going for maybe a Drogheda win. Still fancied, you know, I fancied them get a point 0-0. I seem to be going for a lot of 0-0s lately on recent shows, but one thing we've seen with Drogheda a lot this season, when they've had a bad night, they've gone hard at it on the training ground during the week and they've bounced back very quickly.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1. Okay, sounds good. And the final one is that Monday night game, Cork City against Shamrock Rovers. I know it's a bit difficult to preview a game given that these two teams will be playing before that, but this could be the game where it's all wrapped up from a Shamrock Rovers point of view. I'd expect them to go down there and win, even if they do lose on Friday against Pats.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll go 2-0 Shamrock Rovers on Monday.
Okay, given their confidence might be just slightly dented if they do lose to Pats, I'm going to go 2-1 to Rovers on Monday. But as we said, by the time we are back here for next week's show, Gary, we could be talking about 4 in a row for Shamrock Rovers.
That's it. It's great. It's not crazy to say, but it's probably a bit more of a stumbling type of season. We thought earlier on this season that they'd, as you reminded us there, that it was going to be, you know, 10 points ahead of, well, we said Derry were going to be second. I don't think any of us, where did we play as Pats, can you remember?
Probably third, I'd say. We wouldn't have had...
You probably had Dundalk there.
No, I had Dundalk fourth or fifth. Fourth or fifth.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think it's going to be... it is going to be 4 in a row. It's unfortunately, I think, as you said already, Pats have ran out of road, even though they've... I think they're probably the most formed team since John Daly took over. I think they're top of the form table, which is about 30-odd games at this stage now, but... look, he's had a just on John Daly. He's done some job.
He has, but I think we touched on it a few weeks ago. There seems to be some Pats fans that are still not overly convinced, and it just makes me wonder if let's say they don't win the league or the cup, and he gets off to a slow start next season. You know, football's a funny old game.
I think the fans are funnier, but I just think, you know, we probably haven't given him, well, I don't think I've given him enough credit. I think he's done a fantastic job since he went for a league where it's
difficult to be consistent. I think as you said, the record in terms of points picked up since he took the job has been very good, and he's got them to the cup final and into Europe again next year. So that's a very successful season.
He's ticked a lot of boxes.
Before we go, a couple of listener questions. Paddy Walsh, who generally leaves us one most weeks, big Galway United fan, and we should say, of course, well done to Galway, got their hands on the trophy the other night, but his is more
first
of a
time in their history. First time, is it their first major trophy in their history? Is it?
What was I going to say? More of a comment from than a question from Paddy, but okay. That's fine. We welcome those two. Watched Rory Keating for Galway United a couple of years back and thought he was decent, but never expected him to hit the standards he's hitting now. I hope he gets the golden boot. Yeah, I actually haven't looked at the race for the golden boot. I know the likes of Keating and Forrester, Falabi, I think, are all kind of
13, 14, the lot of them, I think.
I think most people would love to see Rory Keating win it this year. Dwayne Doyle, who is a big Shells man, he says, little has been said about Shells' injuries throughout the season, with Matty Smith and Sean Boyd both being out for long periods. Friday night was an example of injuries catching up with the squad. Nothing from the bench to change the game, with no Boyd, Smith, Hakiki, McManus and J.R. Wilson. And he continues by saying, nearly a miracle that Europe is still on the cards. That's a very, very fair point. But I think we've probably said it more than enough on this podcast. And if we haven't, Dwayne, then I apologise and I'll say it now. I think Damien Duff has done a remarkable job this season. And he's in there for manager of the year for me.
Yeah, I think so. But and we did say that a couple of weeks ago. I think with, you know, the struggles with injuries that we probably haven't highlighted enough, to be fair.
Yeah.
But also like some really good results. They're the tightest defense in the league, I think.
Yeah, by far. Yeah. 23 goals conceded in 34 games.
There's a lot to be said for that. Like, that's sensational stuff. Like, you know, and particularly with the, you know, that's really down to the manager, that type of thing. The way they set up and the way they approach games, and you know, that probably goes into all the opposition analysis and all the rest of that, which is all important. But you know, to put that, it's all great talking about it in the dressing room or in the media room the week before, the week of, to get it where the rubber meets the road on the pitch. It's resonating and it's working out for them. We highlighted, though, that we'll say we were looking for Jack Moylan last year to maybe kick on and maybe contribute more goals, which he has done. But they're still missing a proper... You know, you used to say 20 goal a season, lad, but, you know, they don't really exist in the League of Ireland anymore, yeah. Because anybody that scores 5 goals in 2 or 3 months, you know, there's some lads sniffing around looking to bring him to League 1 or 2 or whatever, as we've seen a number of times already. But
with Jack Moylan as well, of course.
And now Jack Moylan, of course, as well.
Look, it won't be an issue for Shells. They've got a £1 trillion budget to work with next year, so...
Yeah,
they'll be fine. Mark Murphy, who's a Bose fan. Do the rest of the Bose fans know you're here, Mark? Good to have you.
Oh, Jesus.
And actually, just on that, our old pal Gip from Pat's, I hope he's listening. I'm sure he is. He listens every week right down to the last second. But he wanted to know a few weeks ago where we're going to be on Cup Final Day so he can enjoy a pint with us. I'm usually in the in Irish Town House before the Cup Final. I think that. Probably going to be a base for Pats fans again, so hopefully I'll see you there again. I think, though, what I heard, Gary, you're going to be minding the bees in Dalymount that day. You've been asked to look after.
I know, I couldn't be trusted with that now, to be fair. No, I have a play. I am going somewhere, but I can't remember the name of the place.
That's useful. That's good information.
It is good information. I was there.
Just drop
the 2021 final.
We'll get your Git's number and you can drop him a pin.
Sound.
Right, Mark Murphy, would you take the over or under on the Cup Final breaking the record? Last announcement was that there was 30,000 sold. Depends what record we're talking about here. I think I heard somewhere recently the Cup Final record, is it something like 46,000 or something going long way back?
I don't know. We're talking about Aviva
record. Aviva record is about 36. So yeah, I'd be disappointed if it doesn't hit 40 now. For me, there's no reason it shouldn't be selling out, but the FAI, as usual, are not having a blinder. So, stamp your bingo cards, folks. There it is. Took us right until the end, but we got a good old FAI hammering in there.
Yeah, we did. But no, I think
another one for that vendetta list of yours.
Yeah, the
FAI. Are you there?
I am there. No, I'm just
keep up, man. Come on, like, keep up.
They hardly make a mess of it so that it doesn't break the last record. Like, you know, there was a lot of other stuff going on. Like, people were dropping out with COVID and all of that other stuff. You know, it was only at the end of 2021 that final, so there was still a lot of crap going on, and people were just can't go into a big crowd now and all that other stuff. But we're gone a good way away from that now. I can't see how it couldn't be 40,000 again. It has to be done.
Hopefully. Peeps Nation, another regular contributor. Given the excitement from the beginning of the season with crowd numbers, is this season so disappointing, and what has produced standard-wise? Sorry, I've lost my trail of thought on that one, but I think he's just asking about the standard of the league. The punctuation's not great here, peeps.
sorry, Shakespeare.
Let's go again here. Given the excitement from beginning of the season with crowd numbers, is this season disappointing in what it has produced standard or quality-wise to capitalise on that momentum? Okay, I get you now. I think the amazing thing is me and you have spoke about standard a lot this year. I don't think either of us have been overly impressed with either league.
No.
Yeah, we're seeing sold out signs going up most weeks, particularly for the big games. Like, you're looking at Rovers, Pats this week. That's going to be an unbelievable occasion. There's big crowds turning out, and there just seems to be, even as we talked about at the top of the show, so many League of Ireland tops knocking around there at the Ireland game the other day. There seems to be just an unbelievable hunger for League of Ireland right now. And people just can't wait to get out of a Friday and go to a game, have a few drinks, sing a few songs. There's an unbelievable energy behind the league. And I don't think the standard on the pitch really matters that much. I think people are just, I don't know. It seems like League of Ireland is becoming cool. I don't know. It's great to see. That's been one really enjoyable aspect of this season for me, has been the energy and momentum behind the league in terms of crowds and all the rest. I have been a bit disappointed by the standard, but hopefully we'll get a good cup final that might capture the imagination of the outside League of Ireland man as such.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think if we look back on the cup final a couple of years ago, it was class. Had loads of different, you know, 0-0, 1-1 after extra time, and then penalties. It was, you know, it was a really, really good cup final, and there was a lot of crack in it or whatever. So why we can't repeat that, and, you know, that'd be a great way to sign off the season.
The Pats Bowes Cup final.
What?
Are you talking about the Pats Bowes final from a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
You said on this pod a few weeks ago that was a crap final. And I agreed with you. It was good drama in it, but the football was brutal.
No, that's what I'm talking about, the drama. Yeah. Signing it up.
That's what it's all about, isn't it? The drama.
If it didn't cut across me, I was going to say that, from a footballing perspective, and us Eagles looking at League of Ireland football the last 20-odd years, there hasn't been a huge bag of quality. And that's probably, you know, it is a disappointment. But I think, you know, there's been a lot of drama, a lot of things to talk about. Maybe if reffing was a bit better, there'd be a few less things to talk about, but that's it all adds up, you know?
Yeah. Final question comes from Cove Sports. He says the only thing we should be discussing is the First Division playoffs. Look, we've done that, and I think Cove Sports will be a very happy man tonight. First part of the job done, and off they go now to Wexford, or I mean, back to Cove, I should say, home game, and hopefully they'll get a big crowd out for that one. But look, that brings us to the end of the show. Again, a huge thanks to Brian Ainscough, the Kerry FC CEO, for joining us on this week's show. Thanks to all of our listeners that continue to tune in as well in your droves each and every week. Make sure you hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening, let it be Spotify, Apple, or whatever other platform you use to listen to your pods. Do feel free to leave us a review or a rating on Apple or Spotify as well. That helps us get that bit further up the charts and exposes us to potentially new listeners and new eyes and ears on the League of Ireland, which is what this show is all about. But until next week, we've again been brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. But from Gary Vendetta, Riley and Kieran Burke, a huge thanks for tuning in. And we'll be back again next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.